Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Welcome to MotorWeek's podcast number 78. I am John Davis, and around our table today is producer, writer, and two-wheeling reporter Brian Robinson.
Oh, it's glad to have you back, John. So I'm sure our listeners are glad to have you back as well.
Well, thank you for doing such a great job in my absence. I don't know. You got a lot of fan mail off of that last podcast. And our writer researcher Patrick Lucas has joined us.
Hello, cyberspace.
Nice to have you with us, Patrick. Okay, we've got our usual lightning round, and we'll dip into our mailbag. But first, we're going to run down a variety of cars that we basically have had around our shop in the last 30 days or so. And I'm going to start with one. Patrick, I'm going to start with you in this car and say, all right, Patrick.
Okay.
What's the first thing, words that come to your mind when I say Toyota Avalon?
Boring, pretty boring. Not a whole lot comes to mind. I mean, I just definitely never something I would buy or even consider buying.
Along those lines, yeah. I mean, it's a big, comfortable car for people that need to cruise down to Florida every winter.
All right, you won't actually say geriatric, but I will say geriatric. Well, anyway, since the advent of the Avalon, stretched or gussied up Camry, depending on how you want to look at it, that's really was the focus of the car. Made in the USA, Toyota that could go up against what Buick used to be, which was the old man division at GM. And as Buick has shaken that off, it sort of left Avalon as the lone vehicle out there for folks that were looking for that last car. And when you looked at an Avalon, usually, as Patrick said, you sort of looked at this rather boring, very conservative looking, even things like the interior was designed like car interiors sort of looked like 25 years ago. Well, the new Avalon that we've just tested basically is a huge departure from that. Still based on the Camry, but actually now it's based on the new Lexus ES350. So it's on the longer wheelbase than it has had. So it's a substantial step up from the Camry. Still has the Camry powertrain, the 3.5-liter V6. But now it also offers a hybrid. And from looking at the car, and I'm going to throw it back to you guys, you've seen the car. I think it looks a heck of a lot better. I won't say that it's ready for the 20-somethings, but it doesn't necessarily have as old an image, I think, anymore.
Yeah, but slapping a awkward-looking ginormous grill on the front really isn't going to change its mission. It drives a little bit nicer, more entertaining, but it's still just a big, comfortable car. There's a certain amount of people out there that appeals to.
Well, let me ask Patrick about that. I mean, most of the cars we get in here are midsize or smaller. This is a full-size car.
True.
Patrick, in case you don't know, is one of the youngest members of our staff. Do you ever see people in your generation driving cars, full-size cars? Or do you think this is strictly something for, people older than you are?
I mean, I'm not going to say that no one my age is driving that car, but, I mean, I don't see a lot.
No real appeal.
I mean, not particularly.
Because they're aiming this car at, not at you, but say at least 50-year-olds, 45 and 50s.
I can see that. I mean,
how about your parents? Could you see your parents driving something like this?
I mean, my dad's a truck guy. My mom's a big crossover fan. So, I mean, I don't know if they'd go for the full-size sedan, but, I mean, I can definitely see. I mean, you're definitely getting a lot of luxury for it.
Well, you've got, think about the other cars you've got in this market. Well, at least the size market. You've got the Taurus. You've got, what's the new Hyundai? The Azera. The new version of the Azera.
Which I liked.
Which I think is a very dynamic-looking car. I like the Taurus, for that matter. Do you think this new Avalon looks like it could compete with those well, or do you still think it's basically an older choice?
Yeah, not when it comes to driving dynamics, for sure. But as far as luxury, I think it's a step above both of those, and I think that's what probably that buyer wants.
Would like to have a Lexus, but can't quite get there, and so...
Exactly. Patrick kind of hit into that. It is very luxurious inside. And again, very, very comfortable car. And I think we tend to forget that maybe this car isn't really even designed for our market. It's more for a status vehicle in the Asian market, perhaps. But it's built here, I believe, and
yes,
so might as well sell it here as well.
Okay, so Avalon, you're soldiering on with a new design, and I think you have made, I think we all agree they've made improvements, but maybe it's still not ready for the 30-somethings or even the 40-somethings quite yet.
Yeah, and it is their flagship, so it's not really for anybody. It's somewhat
an aspirational
vehicle, so that, yeah. But you can, I don't know, they've made the Camry so nice that I'm not sure that it's, you know, it's that big of a step over Camry? Or?
Except for maybe more back seat room. That's a good point. Okay, let's move on to a car I think is a little more in tune with how we all see ourselves here at Motor Week anyway, and that's the Hyundai Veloster Turbo. When we did the original Veloster, which for those of you that may be living under a rock, is this really sharp-looking little hatchback sport coupe from Hyundai that's got this trick suicide-like fourth door on the right side.
Oh, it's a conventional. It's not a suicide door.
Well, it's not a suicide door, is it? It opens conventionally. I keep thinking it is, but no, you're right.
Other people have done that with a rearward opening door, but it's...
It's a regular door.
Right, but just on the right side.
But just on the right side. Yeah. Thanks. Anyway, when we tested it, we all basically said, great-looking car, but not really enough power to go along with the looks. It's got this very slick-looking outside, a motorcycle-inspired inside. Now they come back with the turbo. We have 201 horsepower versus 138 of the old car. 0 to 60 is under 8 seconds. Still not a rocket ship, but not bad. Okay, guys, having set the preambles, were you impressed with it? Is it hot air on a cool-looking little car? What?
No, it was definitely exactly what that car needed. It was more power. And it handled pretty well to begin with, so which I don't think they changed the handling at all. They just kind of stopped the turbo on there. And
basically, it's the same suspension.
And it comes with a lot more options than the base car. But I think it's great. It's still, I don't know if I'd put it up there in like GTI world, but it's a fun handling car that now has a fair amount of power.
Patrick. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to blow you away, but I had a lot of fun with it personally. I know I read a lot of people had gripes with the shifter and like the manual transmission. I thought it was really fun, really easy to use, easy to shift, and it was great for just zooming around town.
And even though that's one of the cars that has been involved in this Hyundai controversy about fuel economy, it still did pretty well on fuel economy, as I recall.
Yeah.
What do you think about the looks of it? I mean, they've given it this much more aggressive grille, and to me, it's sort of takes the attractiveness away from the body, which I thought was such a slick little piece of work.
No, I think it looks even better. I mean, it looked, I wouldn't say feminine.
Here we have the age difference.
I wouldn't say it looked feminine before, but it stood out. It definitely looks a little more masculine now. Mm-hmm. It's got the body colored spoiler and some sill extensions. And I mean, it still turns my head going down the road when they really stand out. There's really nothing else out there on the road quite like it, and I think it looks good.
I love to talk about interiors because once upon a time, that was where all my interests lie. I love getting in it. I feel like, of all the cars we get in, there aren't very many anymore that you sort of feel like you wear and like it's almost an intimate experience. And you slip into this car, it's got plenty of room in the front, but you do feel like you're basically part of the car almost, which was a great part of the enjoyment for me.
Yeah, I liked it. I like the little pushed starter in the center, in the direct center. It was kind of hard to find at first, and once you did, you just realized,
It's like right there by the shifter.
Yeah, exactly.
You think, how smart. First you can't find it, and then it's like, oh, that's really clever.
Yeah,
really
exactly.
Very rational.
And the rear seat, it does have a decent amount of room, but the opening is really hard to get through.
Yeah, I guess that was why I was thinking it was a suicide door, but it is narrow, but... again, look at who this car is aimed at.
Yeah.
And, they're probably not going to carry two people in the back that often.
I didn't even bother trying to get in the back seat because I figured I'm never going to use it.
You're a tall guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have your knees up and your chin probably a little bit. All right, Hyundai Veloster Turbo. I think everyone pretty much agrees that was a terrific move on their part and just what the Hyundai needed for their little coupe. Here's a car. Our next one is one that we've had all the varieties that there have been made here at Motor Week at one time or another. It's been one of our favorites for many years. Now we're faced with a very significant difference, different car than before. I'm talking about the BMW M5, their M-tuned version of their 5 Series. Some drastic changes from the last car. The V10 is given way to a twin-turbo V8, still has more horsepower, 560, a blast to drive, but this is a big car now. This is no longer some slightly above compact, super high-performance sedan. It's a, you know, it's a clear mid-size car. Does that and the fact that, you know, the M5 has such a great reputation, do they work? Is this car a true M5 or is it something less?
I have mixed feelings on it because it is an incredible performing car. Mm-hmm. It's really lost nothing on the performance numbers. But I wouldn't say it feels boring because it's certainly not boring. It just doesn't really feel fun. I mean, it does everything so well that there's like no drama and it's comfortable now just to tool around town in. That I don't know. It maybe
is
lost
it too
some character.
Refined? Yeah. Are we getting too refined? You mentioned the word character. I think that's a good point. It's like there used to be a rough edge, a sharp edge to the car. And now it's like whatever you want it to do, it just does it.
Yeah, I mean, I was sort of stuck in the middle too because, like you mentioned, real comfortable. You drive it around town, you're like, oh, I'm driving a 5 Series. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you put in Sport Plus, and it's just way too much for the street almost. And there's just like, there's not like an in-between kind of. It's kind of like kind of boring.
It's either boring or it's more car than most people will ever
exactly.
be able to use in their lifetime.
Yeah, if you can figure out all the settings, you can adjust like every suspension, throttle mapping, mm-hmm. shifting point. It would take a while to figure out, find your ultimate setting, but you know, once you do, you can program it in there, but it's still an incredibly performing car.
And do you ever recall having a car here before that did not have a park position for the automatic transmission?
That's BMW's thing now. It takes a little while to get used to, but the thing.
It's, you know, basically there's no way to actually, well, you can put the car into park, obviously, but there's no P that you're aiming for or anything else. It's how you move the shifter, and I found it very frustrating. I, too, loved driving the car. Felt like I was in a rocket ship when you called on it, but on the other times, it was so refined, and I guess that's the best word I can come up with, that I lost track of the fact that I was in a super high-performance car.
I don't think that was part of their design, is to kind of civilize it a little bit. I mean, that's where, you know, everything from Ferraris to, mm-hmm. you know, Lamborghinis now are becoming like daily drivers. They still have all the performance, but, you know.
And, you know, we used to applaud performance car makers when they did that. But now it's sort of like we've changed our tune because everyone's there. It's sort of like, come on, give me something a little unexpected again. So I guess just it just shows you can't ever please folks that test cars for a living. So anyway, final words on the M5?
Despite all the negativity, I still loved it.
It's not negative. I just think we're sort of like remembering what it used to be it's changed.
Yeah, I would still love to have one as
Me
well.
Me too. Although, I don't think any of us would turn around.
Six-figure, you know, it's over 100 grand. I'm not sure that that'd be the first car I'd buy for that kind of money, but I certainly wouldn't kick it out of my garage.
Speaking of expensive cars, that's a good segue into our next car. We've all had a chance now to experience the Tesla Model S. If you're not familiar with Tesla, they're an electric car manufacturer. They built a Lotus-derived electric roadster for years that was very successful. They've now come out with a full-fledged luxury five-door hatchback called the Model S. Prices ranging from $65,000 to about $95,000. The first ones are the upper end car, has a long range, the longest range of any electric car out there right now. I think the government is 260 something.
220.
Something. It's over 200 miles on the EPA score. Tesla claims about up to 300, but I think the EPA is a little less than that. Anyway, having said that, my biggest apprehension when I walked up to the car was, is this car going to live up to the image of a $65,000 to $95,000 car? You can buy some pretty impressive automobiles for that. That was the question I had. How would you guys answer that question? Did you think it lived up to its billing?
It was incredibly luxurious. And just the fact that, you know, all the high tech that's involved in it, it's certainly worth that kind of money.
I was pretty impressed. I mean, yeah, it takes some getting used to that big flat screen, touch screen that controls just about everything inside. But the workmanship looked very, very good. The materials, for the most part, there were a few hard plastics around, but they were comparable in quality to what you would find from a European manufacturer in that price range. It drove, of course, very quiet, except for a little bit of wind noise. Patrick, anything to add?
I mean, yeah, I was definitely impressed with it. I was almost bordering on a little intimidated because I didn't know what to expect. And I saw that giant screen. I was like, I mean, how am I going to work this thing? But I mean, I think that EFI did a real nice job, like some slick styling stuff, a little hidden charge port behind the, was it the tail light?
The tail light, yeah.
I mean, I thought they definitely put a lot of work into it.
Huge
it definitely
amount
shows.
Of storage. Yeah. I mean, you have trunks, front and rear, had good rear seat leg room. You know, for a, usually when we see a vehicle in from a small startup manufacturer, we can poke a lot of holes, especially in quality. There weren't too many here.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, you know, seeing this car in the auto shows and stuff that they could pull it off. But, I mean, I guess they're still working on it and refining it, but yeah, I think they definitely did pull it off. It's a pretty amazing piece.
Yeah, it remains to be seen whether or not there's going to be enough market for this particular car, but I know they claim that, I guess, the first year's worth of 20,000 is sold out, and I can see why. It's gotten a lot of awards, and I think it deserves it.
Yeah, it's like everybody's car of the year all of a sudden,
yeah.
Which I'm not sure it's all that.
Yeah, but. We have a big trouble on Motor Week giving car of the year to something that you really – that cost about the same as a condo. But that's the way the market seems to go these days. Okay, let's move on now to our lightning round where we have about 2 minutes to debate the topic that has been suggested for today. And at the end of that 2 minutes, you're going to hear our producer, Michelle Parker, hit the bell. And that means that we have to stop within at least a reasonable amount of time after that. Okay, here we go. I alluded to this before. Hyundai and Kia recently admitted to overstating the fuel economy of some, and actually the majority of their vehicles. What do you think the short-term and long-term impact on buyers is going to be? And how can the Korean automakers regain the trust of buyers? For those of you that aren't familiar, Kia and Hyundai are actually both part of the same company, even though they're two different brands. And this faux pas, they said mistake in testing, affected both models. What happens in the auto industry is when you see those window stickers on cars, they come from tests. And while the tests are actually sanctioned by the government, they're usually done by the automakers. And then the government comes along behind them and validates them. And in this case, they tried to validate them and they couldn't do it. And they found a problem.
I learned from this whole thing. I assume the government did the testing and that was it. But yeah, they just take manufacturers' word for it unless there's a problem, which obviously there was a problem.
And if they bad manufacturer claims, you know, really high numbers, which Hyundai has been doing. It's been a cornerstone of their marketing. They go in there and test them. Actually, excuse me, I'm wondering why it took them so long. They've been out there with a whole lot of 40 mile per gallon cars for over a year. So anyway, back to the question, since I used up so much of the time.
My fault.
Are consumers really going to care? Is it hurt their image? What do you think?
I would have said no, that, you know, mistakes happen and whatever, but they put so much of their advertising into that 40 miles per gallon, all the auto show stuff, and they made a big deal about how they didn't need an asterisk claiming that you had to have it in eco mode or it's a specific model, that all the models got 40 miles per gallon, and they went overboard with it so much that, yeah, I think it's going to do a lot of damage. I mean, I think I'll double check everything they tell me from here on out.
Not only that, but from a consumer standpoint, can they trust what they're going to be told? Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely invites the question of whether or not that was a true mistake or whether they were, you know, fudging their numbers a little bit, which is kind of scary. But I mean, they've been pretty reliable. They have the great warranty
and
all that stuff.
Oh, the cars are great.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely for a little bit. You're probably going to have to take everything with a grain of salt.
It is amazing. They've kind of gone very quiet in their advertising. They no longer talk about fuel economy at all.
Well, and how many people were buying this car because, you know, the Accent and other car, the Veloster, how many people were buying that strictly because of the fuel economy? or were they buying it because of the price? I don't know.
Plus, also, I should say that, and we didn't talk about it, but Hyundai stepped up and is going to reimburse owners for what they have figured out is the amount of extra money they will spend for fuel. And actually, it's going to cost the company initially about $100 million. And there's all kind of huge lawsuits that will probably lend themselves to other settlements. So the company was, when they did discover it, they were up front. They came out with a solution to at least reimburse owners. And we're probably going to be hearing about this for years. But I guess the old, this shows that if you're going to start bragging, you better make sure that you're bragging about something you can back up.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's the little guy trying to, you know, overtake the big guys, as Hyundai and Kia have always had that kind of reputation. And this is not something that they needed, that's for sure.
Okay, finally, let's go on to our Motor Week mailbag. Remember, please submit your questions to us if we choose your answer on to use on our podcast, or your question to use on our podcast. You'll win a fabulous pre-shrunk Motor Week t-shirt. So here we go. All right, from Roger, he wants to know, what happened to real compact pickup trucks? Are they gone for good, or can we see them coming back in the near future?
That's the greatest question we've had in a long time. I mean,
thank you, Roger.
Yes, definitely, Roger. Because we have this exact conversation around the office all the time, and Ben and I, both, you know, small truck owners previously.
As I am.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous, really, that you can't get a decent small truck anymore. And now is actually the perfect time for it. It's, yeah, I don't know what to tell you, Roger. I hope that we'll come back in the future. They need to.
Yeah, I've got a Ranger, a 2002 Ranger, and it was the smallest of the so-called small pickup trucks out there. And it's perfect, you know, for around-the-house duties. And the manufacturers, including Ford, keep saying, well, we don't make as much money. By the time you load these things up, you can buy a full-size pickup. They miss the point. Sometimes you just don't want that big, hulking, full-size pickup truck.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Ford, is more than any other manufacturer, is really missing out. I mean, they've got that 2-liter EcoBoost engine. They could drop that. You know, it doesn't even have to be a great riding truck. I mean, it can be an old chassis. It doesn't really matter. If you're giving people a small truck, good fuel economy, at a decent price, I think they could do it easier and probably better than what's out there now. I mean, Tacomas, they're hard to find. Used Tacomas are hard to find, and they're even new ones, there's only one or two in the lot usually.
And they're actually a little bigger than probably what.
Well, they've gotten big.
Yeah, they've all gotten mid-size, just like the new Canyon in Colorado from GM and Chevy.
They've all gotten bigger.
Yeah,
but you know, they can sell them. I'm not sure why Ford doesn't think they can sell them.
Patrick, market for small trucks in your opinion?
I mean, it's not my area of expertise, but.
But on this show, you're expected to be an expert on everything.
That's true. Right. I should have known that. I don't know. I mean, car companies, they know. If they don't see the demand for it, I mean, I guess.
I was very excited when Mahindra, the Indian manufacturer, was talking about bringing in, you know, this rough and tumble little diesel compact truck that they make. And I'm very disappointed that that didn't actually happen.
Yeah,
I think that would have had a great market.
Yeah, like all the Chinese cars, they never seem to be able to actually get here.
So anyway, Roger, you have some options. It doesn't look like you're going to have the smallest option that you're looking for. Start writing. You know, Ford and the other manufacturers, maybe somebody up there shares their opinion.
There's a new Tacoma coming out next year, right? Do we know if it's bigger or smaller?
It's probably not going to be any smaller than what we have now. It doesn't seem like that any manufacturer is in a hurry to take something and downsize it. But you never know. With the new fuel economy standards that are going to be very, very difficult for truck manufacturers to make, it actually opens the door to the need for one of these small trucks even more, because that can offset some of their big trucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's about it. We've wrapped up pretty much our Motor Week podcast number 78. It was a very spirited discussion. I want to thank very much Brian Robinson and Patrick Lucas for joining me today. It was great fun, guys. And I also would like to thank our audio engineer, Dave Wainwright, who is always sitting there to make sure that we sound coherent even when we don't. Our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, whose idea started this whole thing. And, of course, our producer, Michelle Parker, otherwise known as the Lady with the Bell, who schedules our podcasts, does all of the rundowns, and makes sure that we know what we're talking about, even when we don't. Right, Michelle?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks very much for taking your time to listen to our podcast today. Be sure to catch Motor Week on your local public television station and also on the cable channel Velocity. Till next time, I'm John Davis. Thanks for watching and listening to Motor Week.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.